Okay, let's dive in. Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we try to make sense of complex tech stuff and make it useful for you. Today, we're tackling Apache Airflow. It's this, well, this orchestration tool you hear about everywhere, handling simple scripts right up to really complex ML pipelines. And our mission today, especially for you, the listener, maybe just starting out, is to really pull back the curtain on Airflow. We want you to walk away understanding what it actually is, its core ideas, and why, frankly, it's become such a standard for managing workflows.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you've ever had that horrible 2 a.m. wake-up call because some critical nightly script failed and you're scrambling across like a dozen systems just to figure out what went wrong, well, that's the core problem Airflow really sets out to solve. The sources define it pretty clearly. It's a platform built by the community to programmatically author, schedule, and monitor workflows.
Programmatically. Okay, that sounds key.
It is key. That's the shift in thinking we want you to grasp. It's not just about setting timers. It's treating the whole workflow, the entire process, as actual software. And when you do that, when it's all code, suddenly it's maintainable. You can version it like any other code. You can test it properly. And maybe most importantly, multiple people can collaborate on it effectively.
Right. That leap from just having scattered scripts everywhere to having this codified, managed process.
That's the aha moment. That's what makes Airflow feel almost indispensable once you've used it.
Okay, that makes sense. And handling these complex automations, well, it needs solid infrastructure. So we really want to thank the supporter of this deep dive, SafeServer. SafeServer supports hosting for tools like Airflow and helps with your digital transformation journey. You can find out more at www.safeserver.de.
All right, let's get into the nuts and bolts then. The building blocks. The sources really stress that Airflow defines these sometimes really complex multi-step processes entirely in pure Python. Yeah, and that's a huge, huge advantage for getting started and for keeping things maintainable down the line. If you know Python, you're basically good to go. You just use standard Python features you already know, like date time formats for scheduling. You can use loops to generate tasks dynamically. It gives you complete flexibility.
So no weird XML files or obscure command line flags to learn.
Nope, none of that black magic, just Python.
Okay, so we define all the steps in Python. How does Airflow actually know the order to run things in? What manages the dependencies?
Ah, that brings us to a really core concept, the DAG. That stands for Directed Acyclic Graph.
Right, DAGs. Heard that term.
It's the fundamental unit of work in Airflow. The DAG is essentially the blueprint for your workflow. It lays out all the individual tasks and, crucially, the dependencies between them. Then the Airflow scheduler looks at that DAG and executes the tasks, making absolutely sure that, say, step B doesn't even think about starting until step A has finished successfully.
That control aspect sounds really powerful. But hang on, if my process is always the same, pretty static, why wouldn't I just use a basic scheduled script or maybe a simple serverless function? Why add the overhead of Airflow?
That's a really good question, and it touches on the difference between basic scheduling and proper orchestration. Airflow brings all the extras: handling complex failures and retries, figuring out dependencies, providing visibility, things simple schedulers just don't do. But you're right about the scope. Airflow really shines when your workflows are, let's say, mostly static or change slowly over time. And critically, the tasks inside your workflow. Ideally, they need to be idempotent.
Idempotent. Okay, define that for us.
Idempotent means that running the same task multiple times produces the exact same result as running it successfully just once.
Ah, so if a task fails halfway through and Airflow automatically reruns it.
Exactly. You don't want it creating duplicate data or sending the same email twice or charging a credit card again. You have to design your tasks so that rerunning them is safe and leads to the same final state. It's a vital discipline for stable pipelines.
Got it. So Airflow is like the orchestra conductor, making sure everyone plays their part, even if they need to restart a measure. But I remember the source's warning, it's not for moving huge amounts of data between tasks.
That's correct. Definitely not a streaming solution. Tasks can pass small bits of information, little pieces of metadata between each other using something called XCOMS, cross communication.
XCOMS.
But think of XCOMS like passing a little note, maybe a file path, a database record ID, or just a status flag. They're absolutely not designed for shuffling gigabytes of data around.
Okay.
If you have tasks that need to process large volumes of data, the best practice is always, always to delegate that heavy lifting to an external system built for it, like a database query, a Spark job, or a dedicated data processing service. Airflow just triggers and monitors it.
Okay, makes sense. Keep Airflow focused on the orchestration. Now, thinking about best practices, let's talk about the core design ideas that make airflow so popular. The sources mention four key principles. Let's start with dynamic. What's the benefit there?
This is a massive difference compared to older scheduling tools. Because your pipelines are just Python code, you can use all the power of Python loops, functions, classes, imports, conditional logic to actually generate your pipelines dynamically.
Wait, so say I onboard like 50 new clients and each one needs a slightly different daily reporting pipeline. I don't have to manually create 50 separate DAG files.
Exactly. You could write Python code that reads a list of clients and generates a unique parameterized DAG instance for each one automatically. That's incredibly powerful for managing complexity at scale.
Wow, okay. That saves a ton of manual effort. What's next? Scalable.
Right. Airflow is built with a modular architecture. It uses things like a message queue, think Celery or RabbitMQ, to distribute tasks out to potentially many worker machines. It's designed from the ground up to scale out horizontally. You can add more workers as your workload grows. It's meant to scale, theoretically, to infinity.
Okay, dynamic generation scales out. What about connecting to everything? That sounds like extensible.
Precisely. You're not stuck with just the built-in tools. Airflow has this concept of operators. If the standard operator for, say, interacting with your specific database or cloud service doesn't quite do what you need,
you can just write your own.
Yep. You can easily define your own custom operators, hooks, and sensors. You can extend the libraries to create the exact level of abstraction that makes sense for your team and your environment. It's very flexible.
And the last principle, elegant. That sounds a bit subjective.
It speaks more to the developer experience, I think. The idea is that the pipelines themselves, the Python code defining the DAGs, should be lean, clear, and explicit. It also uses the Jinja templating engine pretty heavily, which is built right into the core. This lets you parameterize your tasks, really effectively passing in dates, configurations, things like that, without making the Python code itself overly complicated or messy. It keeps things readable.
That internal elegance seems to carry over to the outside, too, because, honestly, having spent way too many hours staring at cryptic cron logs in a terminal, the fact that Airflow has a proper visual UI feels like more than just a nice to have. It feels essential.
Oh, it's a huge part of the appeal. It's definitely the anti-cron experience. One of its absolute standout features is the useful UI. It gives you this really robust modern web application where you can see everything, you monitor workflows, you can trigger them manually, you can manage connections, variables. It's all visual. You get full insight into what's running, what failed, and access to the logs for every single task run.
And it's not just one basic dashboard, right? There are specific views.
Yeah, several really helpful ones. There's the main DAGs overview showing all your pipelines. There's the grid view, which is great for seeing task statuses laid out over time. And critically, there's the graph view. This actually draws out your DAG, showing all the tasks and their dependencies, and it colors them based on the status of a specific run. You can instantly see the flow and pinpoint exactly where something went wrong and often why. There's also a code view to see the DAG source code directly in the UI.
That visual debugging is invaluable. And this ties into the robust integrations, doesn't it? The UI manages connections to all sorts of systems.
Absolutely. Airflow comes packed with plug-and-play operators for basically everything you'd expect in a modern tech stack. All the major clouds, Google Cloud Platform, AWS, Microsoft Azure, plus databases, messaging systems, container orchestrators, data warehouses, tons of third-party services too. So chances are, whatever infrastructure you're using now or planning to use, Airflow probably has ready-made components to interact with it. That makes adoption much smoother.
It definitely feels enterprise ready, which probably explains the huge community around it. It's an official Apache Software Foundation project, right? Open source.
Completely open source.
Mm-hmm.
And the community is massive and very active. You mentioned the GitHub stars earlier, tens of thousands, thousands of contributors. There's a really busy Slack channel where people help each other out. It's a very vibrant ecosystem.
That open source nature makes it easy to get started, which is great for beginners. But you mentioned earlier, there's a difference between just running it locally and setting it up for real, for production.
Yes, that's a critical distinction. Anyone with some Python knowledge can probably get a simple workflow running on their laptop fairly quickly. It is easy to use in that sense. However, deploying Airflow for production workloads has some strict requirements you absolutely need to be aware of.
Okay, like what?
The big one is the operating system. Airflow is only officially supported for production on POCX-compliant operating systems. Basically, that means Linux. The community maintains a reference Docker image based on Debian Bookworm, which is a good standard to follow if you're a Windows user.
No native support.
No native production support. You must use either the Windows subsystem for Linux version 2, WSL2, or run Airflow within Linux containers, perhaps using Docker Desktop. That's non-negotiable for a stable production setup.
Okay, that's a major infrastructure point. Linux first, what else?
The database. When you first install Airflow, it defaults to using SQLite. That's fine, only for local development and testing, just to try things out.
But not for production.
Absolutely not recommended for production. Yeah. SQLite doesn't handle concurrent access well, which you definitely have in a production Airflow setup with multiple components hitting the database. For production, you really need a proper, robust database like PostgreSQL or MySQL.
Got it. Use a real database. That need for stability seems reflected in how they manage the project itself, too.
Yeah, they become quite rigorous about it. Since version 2.0.0, Airflow follows strict semantic versioning major.minor.patch. This gives you predictability. You know a patchy H release won't break things, and a minor release might add features but should be backward compatible within that major version. They also actively manage their dependencies on other big libraries, things like SQL Alchemy for the database interaction, Flask for the web UI, Celery or Kubernetes for scaling. They often set upper version bounds on these dependencies.
Why do that?
To ensure stability. It prevents a situation where you upgrade Airflow, but an underlying library it depends on has also updated with a breaking change you weren't expecting. By pinning or capping dependency versions, they provide a more predictable and stable upgrade experience for you.
Okay, so wrapping this up, what's the main takeaway for someone listening, maybe new to this? It seems like if you're dealing with complex automation tasks, especially ones that run regularly and need to be reliable, Airflow is pretty much the standard way to go. It lets you define everything in Python, making it maintainable and testable, and gives you that powerful UI to see what's going on, ditching those old command line headaches.
That sums it up well. It brings software engineering best practices to your automation workflows. And maybe a final thought, a challenge for you to consider as you start building your own DAGs. We talked a lot about idempotency, how crucial it is that tasks can be rerun safely. So pause and really think about the real-world consequences when that principle is violated. What are the most common, maybe even disastrous, pipeline failures you can imagine that happen precisely because a step wasn't idempotent? Think about things like duplicate financial transactions or sending marketing emails out multiple times by accident. Then consider, how does the very act of defining your workflow step-by-step in structured Python code force you to confront and design against those kinds of devastating mistakes up front? That enforced discipline, that's where Airflow adds a huge layer of safety and security.
That's a great point. Designing for failure and reruns right from the start. Excellent food for thought. And once again, a big thank you to SafeServer for supporting this deep dive. SafeServer helps you host software like Airflow and manage your digital transformation. You can find more details at www.safeserver.de. Okay, that's all for the session. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.